Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Fantasy Focus Football. It tapes every Monday through Friday live on Twitter. Be sure to check it out if you're interested in the very best analysis in the game, or if you're just ashamed of how your team is performing and want to live vicariously through others. Follow Fantasy Focus Football as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcast. Also, ESPN Plus subscribers, join an ESPN Plus Fantasy Football League now for a chance to win $250,000. Sweepstakes is U.S. only, 18 or older. No purchase necessary. Visit ESPN.com/ESPN Plus Football Rules for full details and official rules. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we have got your stories from the barbershop. Also, we'll talk a little bit about these quarterbacks in preseason football. But first... Oh, Gabe, it's that time of year. Preseason football. Now, look. I mean, we all know that this doesn't matter at all whatsoever. The football isn't good, so forth and so on, all these things. But you guys get charged up about it. I don't want to tell you that you should not enjoy something that you enjoy, especially like when your enjoyment of that thing kind of fuels, you know, my lifestyle, right? Like, I'm not going to be the person to tell you to stop being obsessive about these things in this kind of way. Because look, man, put money in my pocket and I'm with that. I'm here for that. I don't want to be that guy. I do not. However, it's preseason football, and like, it's one thing to go on Get Up, and they can talk about it. You know what I'm saying? You can go on First Take. They can find a way to talk about it. In this here intimate environment where you guys know me to ridicule such things as preseason football, if that's the thing that happened on the weekend, I don't know what the hell y'all expect me to come in here and talk about on Monday. It's some preseason football. It's some summer league. It's all kinds of stuff that like don't matter. We can't really talk about. I mean, the most exciting thing to happen in preseason football this weekend. I mean, so they do a preseason game now every year with the Rams and the Chargers. You know, they in the same city. They play in the same stadium. Like, I don't think they're trying to get a rivalry going necessarily, but that happens. Like, the Cowboys and the Oilers used to play one. I think the Cowboys and the Texans play one now. You know how that goes when it's local.
Yeah, Niners used to play the Raiders.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that kind of stuff. So anyway, I don't really know what happened, but this one dude, he wasn't really big, but he wasn't small. And he stood up and he got into some argument with these 4 dudes in front of him. And what jumps out to me about the crew that he got into an argument with is them dudes, either they not real Rams fans or they cheap, right? And I say that because those look like good seats, right? That looked like a lower level seating action. It's a dude in a Todd Gurley jersey. It's a dude in a Jared Goff t-shirt jersey. They don't play for them no more. You know what I'm saying? And with Jared Goff, like, why are you putting on for the ochre? Like, that's just one thing I would never understand. It's like some people for various reasons just decide they love some ochre. Alex Smith just went back. He did something at the 49ers game, and they said he got some kind of rousing ovation. Y'all spent 5-6 years saying that dude was that ochre, me, D, ochre, all the ochre, and then he lost his job to another dude who took you to a Super Bowl. What is there to give a standing over? I mean, I guess I know the whole, you know, almost lost his leg thing, but that wasn't when he played for y'all. You know what I'm saying? I know why y'all put off for his ochre, because he lost his job to a black man. That's about all you got to do. Once you go lose your job to a black man as a quarterback, or you take a job from a black man as a quarterback, your Q rate can go through the roof. Case in point, Ryan Fitzpatrick. Hadn't thought about it like that, had you? I don't even want to get into that other one. But either way, you get what I'm saying. Either way. So these cats was at the stadium, and I don't know what happened. I don't know why they got into the beef, but they got into the beef, and one dude was standing on a higher level than the other dudes, right? So it's one dude on one level. It's like 4 of them on another one. And it looked like the beef had kind of simmered down. Buddy turned around. And on some like malice in the palace, some woman who was behind the 4 dudes threw a cup and hit old buddy. And I got to say, out scrapping must transpire. at this point. I can't judge you for wanting to fight after somebody done thrown something at you, right? Now, this person was an uninvolved party. I don't know what it was that she was trying to get going. Apparently, the whole section must have disliked this dude. I don't know. But he turned around and, like, he went on a double dragon situation. Like, I don't know if he had a code or, like, he thought he was on the Mario, you know what I'm saying? And he got the star. You know how the star will do, right? Because old buddy went, like, he took it back to old Ireland. And he decided, I'm going to give him a taste of the back of my hand. And he went and swung and got a piece of all four of those dudes with one backhand, right? And I can't figure out if these four dudes were busters or just had, like, all the self-control in the world. Because Buddy gave all four of them the taste of the back of his hand. And they still ain't really want to fight. They was just there. But the big fella who had an Aaron Donald jersey on, he wanted to fight. Like, he then went down there and bow, bow. Like, he had blows for a bunch of them. But as you might expect, when you're trying to fight somebody at a different altitude than you, there were some balance situations. And so he started to stumble. And so when he's stumbling, he get his booty all up in the face of somebody that's in the row. And, like, now he's tripping, he's falling, and he's falling down in front of these four dudes who suddenly are a lot more enthusiastic about fighting now that the dude has fallen down. But I don't know if the people that was in the section with the dude in the Aaron Donald jersey, the one in the one on four, I don't know if the people in the section were just tired of him or whatever it was. But once he lost his balance, somebody had, honest to God, some wingtips on, like with the holes at the top and everything, you know, at a preseason football game, whatever. Anyway, he put both his feet on that dude's booty and pushed him into the four guys. And once they pushed him into those four guys, he was laid out, and all that was missing was billy clubs. Them cats beat him down like he had run from the police. They were, just punching him in the kidneys. And this one dude inexplicably was like just punching him in the booty. I don't know why. Like, he just kept punching old buddy in the booty. And, like, it wasn't like he started at the booty. Like, he was punching him in his back at first, getting them kidney punches in, and then was like, I'm going to start punching him in the booty. And then just started punching him in the booty. And I just couldn't, strategically speaking, the booty is probably best equipped to handle this. It's a lot of muscle mass in there. Like, if you're really trying to do this, punch him in the tailbone. And you might be thinking, well, that gets a little bit too close to the booty crack. You don't want your hand in there. But go look at that video on how he was punching him. I don't think he really had that concern. Now, so that punching is going down. And I do want to note that lady threw that cup and then tried to get up out the building, like, after it happened, right? So she trying to get up out. That fight is taking place. It winds up stopping. People have asked the question, where was security? I saw security, and sorry, guys, she just wasn't in a position to really make this stop. I saw her in her polo in one of those videos. Like, they don't get the right kind of security, because the right kind of security costs money. They want to have security that's out there wearing Rams gear when they should know by now they need security wearing one of them tight ass black shirts. That's the kind of security that they need. Anyway, what I didn't realize at first is while that was going on, I got an overhead shot after that. And rest in peace to the homie Tiny Lister, because if he was still with us, I would have thought that he was at the game, because some dude went straight Debo for reasons I do not understand. And when I say Debo, I really mean Debo. Like, if you look at the clip and I told you that was James Harrison, you would go into it and be like, damn, look at James Harrison. He bore a lot of James Harrison similarities. He's a big, I couldn't quite tell how tall he was. He ain't seen that tall, kind of like James Harrison, but he's a big, swole, brown skin, black dude, bald headed. I think he might have been there with the instigator. I'm not sure. But once it went haywire, he just started fighting people. And I don't even want to say fighting. Like he started taking on like two dudes at one time. And then one dude, while he was taking on one dude, he somehow slipped and fell. And I don't know how, but that dude let Debo get back up. The dude was standing on a higher altitude than Debo was. They was on the steps. Debo slipped. And I guess it's because he didn't really want to fight in the first place. Like he just wound up here by happenstance because Debo wanted to fight. And so rather than what he should have done when Debo took a knee, which was kick him in the face, he let Debo get back up. Debo got back up, started whooping his ass again. And by the way, the dude at that point that's getting his ass kicked, his pants were falling down. Like his booty is out, which means that from the other angle, his meat was swinging. And they act like this is all just going on at the game. And the best is one of the shots. While it's going on, you know, the PA announcer don't know what's happening. And so the PA announcer is like, there was a sack by number 92. Like while this scrapping is going on, you're hearing the game announcements come down. Like it was kind of surreal. But the most disappointing part about all of this with this fight, one of my friends was working the game as a color commentator. And somebody I wish was my friend was also working the game as a color commentator. My friend who was working the game as a color commentator was Mina Kimes. And seated next to Mina Kimes was Aqib Talib. So I felt that we got robbed, right? Like we got robbed of great potential in this because I hadn't heard about no Aqib Talib controversy, discussion about it rather. And so I hit Mina up and I was like, yo, what Talib think about the fight? And she was like, we had no idea that it was going on. Now, for you guys to understand something, just so you know, because you have probably wondered, like when you turn on like a Sports Center or Get Up or something like that, why you don't see clips like that on there. And it's because the rights agreement is such that we are not allowed to broadcast footage from the crowd. Like things that are taken on camera phones and stuff like that. Like, we just not allowed to do that. That's not it. Because trust me, that would be in Do You Question on Highly Questionable Today if I had my way. It would be the A1 topic if I had my way. But we not allowed to do that. It's just not an option. So it happened. And they said that they had no idea that it was going on. And I got to wonder. Were they trying to hide this from Aqib Talib? Were they unsure of how it might go if Aqib Talib had gotten a handle on this information and had seen the fight? Gabe, are you familiar with the infamous Lamar Thomas commentary in a Miami, Florida International game in 2006?
Ooh, I don't think I remember that one.
Okay, I also have to realize we have a generational situation where you probably don't know who Lamar Thomas was. So Lamar Thomas played wide receiver for Miami back in the day. At their most obnoxious, like at the height of them just being the biggest jerks on the planet, he played receiver. And so he is now a coach. I'm not sure where. I think last time I checked, he was at Kentucky, but he's a wide receivers coach now on the college level. But for a while, he tried his hand at color commentary. And there was a fight, Miami versus Florida International. It got ugly. Like it was one of those with people with helmets off. Brandon Merriweather stomping somebody out that was on the ground. I mean, it was a bunch of Florida dudes, like especially then it's like a bunch of dudes from Miami who went to Miami versus a bunch of dudes from Miami who wanted to go to Miami, but didn't go to Miami. And they might not have gone to Miami for a number of reasons, some of which didn't necessarily have to do with football. You understand what I'm saying here? And they was going at it. And I think Lamar Thomas was on the radio call. And you know how announcers are. Oh, what a terrible scene. What a disgrace to the game. This is putting a black eye on what should be a great night. Like all that stuff. Lamar Thomas did not attend that school of broadcasting. Lamar Thomas is like, oh, yeah. Hey, how you go, baby? He's like, you can't bring that into OB, baby. Like, because they played an Orange Bowl there. You can't bring that into OB. He's like, man, I wish I could go down there and get a piece of it. Act like, that's why I'm asking if they were trying to make sure that Talib did not know that this at all was going on. I'd be like, oh, man, see, that's the thing. When you fight for people, you can't get down there like that, man. You know, like, that's the thing. Talib is not going to be offended Aqib Talib got into a fight during a session at the rookie symposium with one of his teammates. I understand that that was a long time ago, but you understand too. They're just like, yo, don't say anything. Keep it moving. Just make sure, don't let them know. Don't let them know. Because what if it would have been so great if they'd have been out there, yeah, you know, so it's 3rd and 5 and they out here in the cover. Oh, whoa, put that on. Go over there. Hey, somebody tell the director they fighting. They over there fighting.
You don't think that Siciliano, like when the streaker gets on the field and it's like, we are attempting to not give any airtime.
Yeah. That's what he would have tried. I don't know what Mina's plan would have been in that situation. But, you know, Aqib Talib made too much money to be out here being fake. Even he already rich. You know, he got to play along with y'all. Man, please. It would have been cracking if he'd have seen it. I really wish he had. And guess what, Gabe? On this show where we didn't know what we was going to do, boom. We got another block to go that I'm already prepared for. Yeah, see, this is where I was going to go talking about the preseason stuff, which is like, I'll explain to you why I don't really watch preseason football anymore. And it's also the same reason why I do not do draft research anymore. Like, I like to kind of be familiar with who the names are and stuff like that. And the reason is, I don't get nothing out of being right early. Not really. Now, like if I see something or I happen to watch somebody play because I'm watching the game and they really stand out to me, then I'll let you know. Like I think they're going to be there. Because it is kind of fun when you're like, yo, you think you see it and you kind of follow along with it. Like I'm not going with it just to try to be right. Somebody's going to have to grab me. And I'm going to be like, oh, okay, no, this is what's up. And then kind of go with it. Like, you know, you do find yourself enjoying like living that life. But like with the preseason, hey, man, with these quarterbacks, and we got a lot of them this year. Some of them going to play well in the preseason. Some of them going to play poorly in the preseason. But they all are probably going to start a few games this year. And how they doing right now, while that may dictate whether or not they start, it is probably not giving you a great indication of how good they are. You're just not going to get that, right? So, like, I get it for a lot of positions that with the preseason, you can earn your way onto the team. Though practice is probably the place that's going farther. But it's such a, like, foreign environment for football. So evaluating it, you know, making evaluations off of that too much are a little difficult. But that ain't going to stop people from getting charged up. Gabe, you and your 49ers, Trey Lance went out there. It sounded like his performance was wild, uneven, but the highlights got y'all hype.
Threw a big TD pass, showing off that arm.
Yeah, that's what you want, right? Like that's what it is that you're hoping for. Justin Fields was out there, and Bears fans, ain't nobody more starved for a quarterback situation than Bears fans. Think about this, Gabe. Now I know that a couple of these are before your time, but for me, is it possible that the 49ers have had 1, 2, 3, 4. 5 quarterbacks better than any quarterback the Bears have had in that same time period? Joe Montana, Steve Young, Jeff Garcia, Alex Smith, and Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, because Jim McMahon, in terms of when he lined up,
yeah,
the same time as Montana.
Oh, yeah, not only was he better, but like as a football player, Jim McMahon, also, he was hurt all the time because he took them cartoon hits. Like, every time he got hit, it looked like Rocky. You know what I'm saying? How, you know, Rocky never took a jab. Rocky only got spun around in circles and backflipped when he got hit. Like, that was Jim McMahon. And he was a decent player, but no. If the Bears could get them some Jeff Garcia, they would be ecstatic. If he played for the Bears, they'd name a street after him. That's how thirsty they are for a quarterback. That thirsty. So Justin Fields comes out there. I ain't really watched anything that he did, but it sounded like he looked like Justin Fields. And so everybody up there, y'all so excited you got that one going. Trevor Lawrence, ain't no point in watching that. He gonna be the starter. Like, hard stop. They say Mac Jones, we figure at some point that Mac Jones is gonna wind up being the starter. I'll wait to see some actual stuff. Like, I don't want my mind polluted by seeing these, you know, these things that I don't think are telling us anything. You know, like I personally don't want to get to that place, but I 100% like get the level of excitement that people have about this because Zach Wilson was out there. I forgot about that guy. It's clear the Jets are worried about him because we were getting the word out of practices. They're like, I don't know, dog. Like, he'd be throwing the ball to the other team a lot. The exception of like full-on optimism in the preseason, Saints had 6 turnovers in their game where they try to figure out if they go with Taysom Hill or Jameis Winston. Wow, their season, the range of potential outcomes for the Saints season is so broad. But yeah, Sean Payton was not here to be excited or to pretend after they had 6 turnovers in that game. 6 turnovers. In fact, I might want to watch. They're the only one that I really just might want to watch just to see what this all turns into is the Saints. That's it. But otherwise, I guess we just, you know, getting ready, trying our best, trying to get excited. You know, football going to be around the corner. It'll be cool to have. I realized that, like, after we went from basketball into the Olympics, I was in here on Sunday like, what is this TV even good for? Like, what do I do with this? I just got this big old black patch on my wall. Like, for who? For what?
With the preseason football, it's really mostly the fans of the teams that had high draft picks wanting to see players in their new unis.
Yes. I guess that's more or less what you wind up with. It's just that none of it matters is a little cliche, but I think you get the point that I'm making. Like, when Cam Newton, this is 10 years ago now, his rookie year, they didn't have him do very much at all in the preseason. It was really a bunch of handing off, and he didn't look very good throwing the ball. His first NFL game, he looked like a superhero. Like, I want to say he threw for something like 400 yards. He was out there running on them dudes. And then the play that let me know that dude was made of something different. He threw an interception, and Darrell Washington, the Cardinals, intercepted the linebacker. Darrell Washington is a Pro Bowl linebacker at this time. He intercepts it. He starts running back the other way. Cam Newton goes to try to tackle him, and Darrell Washington slid. The linebacker slid because the quarterback was coming, not vice versa. That's when I realized, oh, yeah, that dude going to be a beast.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from Tech.
I'm Dalvin Brown, and I cover innovation for the Washington Post. For years, we've heard that autonomous vehicles, aka self-driving cars, have been on the way. But there are still lots of safety questions that automakers and legislators have yet to find the answer for. One of those primary concerns is known as the trolley problem, or how do you get a car to make life or death decisions that humans make in a split second. And there are some startups working on answering that question, but their answer is you don't. You don't get cars to solve the trolley problem. What you do is you try to create vehicles that can respond quicker to pedestrians or other vehicles on the road. And what they say is that by responding quicker, you prevent vehicles from getting in those 1 in a million situations where they have to decide whether to hit one person on one side of the road or hit another. It is an idealistic view of autonomous driving, but that's the point of automated cars in the first place. We want vehicles that can be more aware than humans are. We want vehicles that are better at predicting and preventing accidents. And so stopping a trolley problem from even happening is probably a good place to start.
Yo, they put that in a way that I had not thought about, which was the idea of I have to hit either one person on one side of the road or one person or another. Which one do I choose? I hadn't thought about that dilemma. Let me tell you something. Let's say I'm going down the road. I'm in my self-driving car. On this side, I got one of my homies. On that side, Stringer Bell. Do you understand how mad I would be if the artificial intelligence in my car decided to kill my mans when we had the option of not just turning towards Stringer Bell, but mashing the gas to make sure the job was done right? A car don't know what to do in that situation. You know what I'm saying? Like, a car can't recognize this is our chance to make the world a better place. And yes, I'm talking about Stringer Bell. He's a character on The Wire. that keeps popping up in other things and forcing me to do things like root for apartheid. Because if apartheid opposed Stringer Bell, how bad could it be?
Programming gets so sinister because it really like breaks things down to the absolute core of it, where it's like, oh, I've got an old lady crossing the street over here, and I've got a crowd of children over here. Which one has greater value to society? Them saying that they're going to be able to make a quick decision beforehand, before it even gets to that life or death point, is pretty ambitious thinking, isn't it?
No, you're absolutely right that it is. But I think we should call it the Stringer Bell problem, right? Like, I really think that we should, like, deep down, that's what we should call it, is the Stringer Bell problem. And again, not so much who do we avoid, but who do we run through?
All right, Bomani, this second story comes from politics, kind of.
Hi, I'm Ko Yu from Vice, and China is making a blacklist of bad songs that will soon be banned from karaoke's. Karaoke, or what some of us call karaoke, is a nightlife staple in Asia. But last week, the Chinese Ministry of Culture and Tourism announced that they'll be compiling a list of karaoke songs containing illegal content. What kind of illegal content, you may ask? We're talking songs that could, quote-unquote, endanger national unity, sovereignty, or territorial integrity. Songs that tarnish national honor and interests, as well as songs that promote obscenity, gambling, violence, and drug-related criminal activity. While no specific song titles have been named in the blacklist yet, China does have a record of being touchy about hip-hop. Both karaoke venue operators and music providers are encouraged to come up with self-monitoring processes to ensure these illegal songs will no longer be available to karaoke patrons. Unsurprisingly, karaoke lovers in China aren't taking the announcement too well. On Weibo, China's version of Twitter, people are perplexed and disgruntled with the new rules. They think this is overkill.
Yo, man. The Chinese, they don't go halfway about this stuff, do they? They ain't taking no chances whatsoever. I do have to ask this question, though. Okay, you let me know if I'm tripping here. And I don't do a lot of karaoke. I think I did karaoke one time. It was at my 10-year high school reunion, right? Just not really my bag. No shade to people who enjoy it. You know what I mean? It's just not really what I do. But I don't feel like I would be making no political statements at karaoke. I don't feel like that's the song I'm trying to do. I don't think I'm gonna come in here and try to do fight to power. I don't think I'm coming in here to do police. I don't even think I'm coming in here to do blowing in the wind. I don't want to do what's going on. You know what I'm saying? I'm coming in here because I like big butts. Like, we can do that, but I don't really understand why we need to do this other stuff.
When you mentioned fight the power just a second ago, the first thought that came to my head when I read this story was their parental advisorying the people. Yes. Saying, you can't handle this. Seems like a specific kind of music. So yeah. It's kind of the NWA, mm-hmm. You know, but probably far more benign than NWA.
Well, right? I was about to say, I don't really feel like right now you got to worry about too much revolution in popular hip hop. Like, that's not you would think this would be the direction the game would be going in right now. But no, it is not doing that at all.
What do you think that is?
I have honestly been trying to figure this out now for about 6 or 7 years. Like, not that there have not been people who have offered some measure of social commentary in rap or just generally in music over the course of the past few years. But my thought was that, especially with everything that's going on in the world and that's affecting everybody, that I thought that it would be like the dawn of a time for like a new Public Enemy or a new Rage Against the Machine, you know, something in that direction. Like the soundtrack to these Antifa type cats, whether you like it or not, okay, or like the soundtrack to Black Lives Matter, whether you like it or not. Like, I thought those kind of things would happen. And no, the whole music game, like, now that it's basically run by like three companies, there are people everywhere making all kinds of music. Like, I don't want to pretend as though there's not a cross section of the kind of music that people are making these days. But there is not a Public Enemy right now, at least as far as I can tell. That's been shocking. I don't want to just blame it entirely on the forces of capitalism, but you got to think that that's what it is.
All right, this last story comes from government. The reporter could not join us for it, although I thought it was too interesting of a story to not do. Just kind of had no idea what was going on, right? So it seems like the last like 5 or so years, what's become increasingly more and more popular is, instead of delivering physical mail to inmates, a company has gone into different prisons around the country and implemented a like scanning system where they basically scan the physical mail that comes in and gives you like a photocopy of what that is. A photocopy of a letter, a photocopy of a picture. But it doesn't seem like they're necessarily super reliable, where things will come in blurry, pictures of family members is like in black and white or like distorted. So that can be like a little frustrating. The quality of what's coming on is decreasing. But then there's also that a lot of these inmates are charged for getting copies of their mail. It seems like infringing upon people's privacy, infringing upon people's rights. So it's something that's happening more and more and more and more. The trend's going in that direction. It's just like another way for kind of like private companies to be getting involved in it. It's a money-making opportunity. But then the story also talked about how it serves as a protector also too for the people who work at the prison by scanning this stuff. They're not necessarily handling it as much, or the company itself that's working on this is handling it. So then it saves them from anything that could potentially be going on that was like nefarious.
Like anthrax type stuff.
So saves them from that. So there's like a, you don't want to both sides this, obviously, but this story mentioned that too. It's just interested in your thoughts.
Yeah. So here's something uncomfortable for a lot of people about prisons, just as a concept and an idea. For them to be effective, they have to serve the prisoner, right? And so the whole idea about sending somebody to prison is basically to not serve them. And we have had such cruel and inhumane prisons in this country for so long that we feel like if it's not inhumane, it's actually not prison, right? By definition, like it's hard to get people to get into the idea of making prison more humane because they're like, yo, so then what is it? You know? So speaking strictly functionally, like not even in some bleeding heart stuff, just like strictly by function, the only way that prison can positively impact the lives of the prisoners, which has to be done in order for this to be a net win for society, right? Because basically what we're saying is we're taking a bad person. It's got to make them a better person. Now, if you think that all the cruelty and stuff will contribute to that, I mean, I guess, but you get what I'm saying. Like you have to make the people better, and people can't get better if they don't have anything to believe in, right? If they don't have something to focus on, some sort of goal to point toward. And so like one reason, for example, Islam is very popular behind the walls because it gives people discipline. It gives them structure. It gives them order. You know, it is very much so conducive to focus in that sort of way, you know, and gives you something to believe in. And so to me, like when I read the thing about the, you know, the people sitting in the mail, they're just talking about like for inmates, like with something scanned, you can't run your fingers over the letter. Like you can't hold on to it. It's not tactile. And for a lot of people, like, you know, a lot of people get sent to jail on some bullshit. Let's not forget that. So, you know, you get sent in there and it can be real easy for you to slip off into something bad just with what's going on in jail. But it might be your little girl, your little boy, whatever it is. That's something for you to believe in, whatever it is. You know, the thing that keeps you going, the thing that makes you want to get out of there. Because for prison to be effective, you got people to never, you need them to not want to go back. And you're not going to do that simply by them living in a hellhole. Because at some point they adapt to the fact that it's a hellhole and figure out how to survive. And then even once they get out, they only know how to live in hellholes. You know, people need something to believe in. And letters are like, there's a reason why the people, when they got somebody behind bars they really love, they stay sending them letters because it gives them something to believe in. It is absolutely something positive for those people. And you just take it away for what? You know, like even if you're like, well, they're scared, they can still see it. It ain't the same. A letter feel different than an email. You know what I mean? It's not the same. But somebody came up with some way. They come in here and make some money. I don't see how this helps the prison at all. Like the prison itself. So like, yeah, you could say, well, we can check and see what it is that people are saying. I mean, you already got people cracking the envelopes and reading the stuff already to make sure. Like privacy is a non-existent concept there. It's just a little thing that you could do in the end to make the society better. But to be cruel, we as a country are willing to make things worse rather than make things better, because that's what prison is supposed to be. Our greatest voicemails are fueled by Gatorade. Whatever path you take to greatness, Gatorade is there to fuel it. Greatness starts with G.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani, voicemail time. You said you weren't in the barbershop on the teaser video, but what made you think of this particular topic?
Yeah, I think what made me think about it was, it was a combination of things. I had gotten my hair cut that day, but also me and Foxworth that morning, we had talked about the lies that people used to tell in high school back in the day. So they had me like, oh, what is the most ridiculous thing you've heard someone say in a barbershop? Because it brings out the ridiculous.
Yeah, because the barbershop is specifically a place where you get all these tall tales. So
yes,
we got a bunch of good ones, Here are the three best, starting with Jermaine in South Carolina.
The barbershop thing really threw me off, and I figured it out at a young enough age, thankfully, that I didn't get sucked up into it. Because, man, at one point, my barber stopped cutting my hair to tell everybody that heaven has a set number of people that's allowed in, and that they probably already hit max capacity, so what are we all doing out here? And I know where he got it. He mixed multiple Bibles and a couple of pamphlets and anything else that came across his desk. It's the insanity, though. They will say anything in that place as long as it goes along with what they believe for the moment. And I just, I'm so glad I heard that when I was like 13. I actually switched barbers. I was like, I don't want somebody like this being responsible for my hair and making me presentable to go outside, because in a way it's almost validating some of the stuff that was coming out of his mouth, though. Anytime you start mixing books and pamphlets, this is what you get. And I really, really, the barbershop is one of the greatest and most terrible places ever for that reason alone.
Yo, he was heated like it just happened yesterday. I do love that, because there's a few different faiths, sects, however you want to put it, that have the idea that there's like a set number of people that can, you know, get into heaven or whatever it is. What I've been trying to figure out is there a bouncer or a fire marshal that start tossing people out? Or like, do they keep some seats open because they know something better's coming? Like, how is your application evaluated relative to the fullness of heaven in the course of that? Because you imagine you over there sitting on a cloud eating grapes, you know what I'm saying? Like, you just got back with the love of your life, and they're like, yo, somebody got that seat. No, right here. Here's my receipt. No. Somebody else got that. But I signed right here. I got papers. I got a lease. Yeah, look at the bottom. Look at that in the real, yeah, real small print. Real small. Yeah. That's right. We reserve the right.
Oh my gosh. This next one comes from Q in Cleveland.
One time I was at the barbershop. This is around 2007. I was like 12 years old. And around that time, that's when Obama was running like the Democratic primaries. Everybody in the shop was talking about, you know, is it really possible to have a black president? While we're having this discussion, a dude comes in and he says, Obama, he ain't even going to be the first black president. We all look at him like, what? What are you talking about? He then proceeds to tell us that there have been four black presidents. He says those four black presidents were Abraham Lincoln, Grover Cleveland, James Garfield, and Bill Clinton. We then ask, what do you mean those dudes were black? And he told us, man, them dudes was as black as me. He was a dark-skinned man, by the way. He was like, them dudes was as black as me. And we were like, well, how do you explain that they don't look like that in their pictures? He was like, look, man, they wearing skin suits. He was actually leaving the shop after that, man. But that's the wildest theory that I've ever heard, that we have had four black presidents prior to Barack Obama.
Okay, now look, you know, we've had the Babe Ruth discussion. You know what I'm saying? Like, he might have been able to sell me on some of them previous ones, because, you know, you never know. You know what I'm saying? Those are lies that people like might tell. I could kind of see that. I don't know how he picked those, but okay. But you can't say that about Bill Clinton. We was there. You know, there's videotapes of Bill Clinton. Like that, wow, he went with, they just out here wearing, how long they been wearing them skins? How long they been doing that? Like, when did they decide to go all in on this? Because that sounds like a serious investment. And like, what happens to your actual skin if you wear them things out all the time? I'm just curious.
Technology wasn't advanced back then.
Yeah. I was saying, back then, definition of black was a little different than it is now, at least in terms of phenotype. You know what I'm saying? But like, Bill Clinton, nah, that was a white man. I seen him.
This last one comes from DJ My Kid Man, Chicago.
Hey, Bo, you want to hear a real good story? I remember 1985 at Goldie Barbershop. Everybody was coming to Goldie Barbershop, and his name was Red. DJ Red was selling VCRs in the barbershop. It was the hottest thing. Everybody knew Red was selling VCRs in the barbershop. But everybody was lined up in the barbershop to get these VCRs. Back in the days, they were beta VCR. So everybody was lining up. It was like at least about 50 to 60 people, and Red made at least like $800 or $900. But when they got home, I was curious, but they were just lined up. I was curious, why was people coming back to the barbershop looking for Red? I thought maybe they looked about more. But the strangest thing at the barbershop, when they got home, it was all bricks. It was the wildest thing at a barbershop. He had it taped up with a VCR box and everything. When they got home, it was nothing but bricks in there. And I was wondering why these white people and black people so trying to carry this box while it was so heavy. Why is this VCR so heavy? But they had it all hooked up. Red and Sylvester had it hooked up. They were putting it in the people's car. But it was nothing but bricks when they got home. Duct tapes and bricks. That was the wildest thing in a barbershop. And, Bo, let me tell you something. I was going to buy one, but I'm glad I didn't buy one because I've been looking for Red. I'd be looking for him right now. At this day, nobody never saw Red anymore. We don't know if he got killed. We don't know if somebody kidnapped him. We don't know what happened to Red. But that day, Red made like $800 or $900. Carrying out VCR to people's cars with number brick. Have a good one, Bo.
Yo, I was wondering if Red ever returned after pulling this caper, because you can't do that. Somebody else told me a story once about somebody selling VCRs, they opened the boxes and it turned out to be bricks. Because like a VCR ain't something you can really crack right there. Like, yo, you got a box cutter?
It's not something that you're really looking to test out,
right?
Or this VCR looks nicer than that one.
Right, you got nothing to plug it into at the barbershop. But I wonder how long it was. Like, I feel like if you read, you got to move all them VCRs in 30 minutes. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to get all them VCRs moved before the first person discovers what's happened and turns back around. Wow.
Even though DJ Mike's story had nothing to do with the tall tale at a barbershop, I just felt I needed to include it because I thought, you know, there was another one that was a strong contender about there being a bunch of Michael Jackson clones out there in the world. I just thought that we needed to hear from DJ Mike.
We always need to hear from Mike. It is greatly appreciated. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Dalvin Brown of The Washington Post. Check out his story on whether self-driving cars can make life or death decisions. Also, thanks to Ko Yu of Vice. Check out her story on the Chinese government banning songs on karaoke lists. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us. Review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.